From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of December 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. A Phase 1 trade deal was struck with China today. We'll hear about the impact from Mike Zuzulo, globalanalytics.biz, and what happened in Chicago for a Friday. Then a bit later in the program, Emerson Nafziger, Extension agronomist from the University of Illinois, will be here to discuss the growing season that was in 2019. And we'll take a look as well at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March contract at 381 in the corn, up 3.25. May at 388, 3.75 higher. July at 390, 3.75, up 3.75. And December corn at 395.25, 2 cents higher. January soybeans up 9.25 today at 907.5. The March at 921.5, 9 higher. May 935.25, up 9.25. And July at 947.5, 8.75 higher. November beans 951, up 7.75. The bean oil up 24 cents at 32.27 on the afternoon. Bean meal at 295.50, up $2.90. December wheat futures unchanged, 539.25. The settlement price. July for the soft red up 1.75 at 537.75. The hard red July at 457.25, a quarter of a cent higher. Live cattle futures at $122.37.5, up $1.95. February at 127.55, 245 higher, and feeders finished up $3.12.5 at $145.67.5. The March there at 146.25, up $2.80 on the afternoon. Lean hogs 52.5 higher at $60.47.5. Crude oil 85 cents a barrel higher. Ethanol up 2.6 cents, or 2.6 of a cent. And heating oil at 3.5 cents higher. That's diesel fuel. Gasoline on the RBOB up 3 cents or thereabouts at $1.66 this afternoon. The Dow around 23 points higher. The dollar down 0.2. And the gold futures at $1,475.90, up $9.20. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us today. Kind of a busy morning in Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Beijing.
Yet another crazy week in the trade, but, you know, it seems like, Todd, when you take a look at the end of the week versus the beginning of the week, we've got potentially the USMCA on the doorstep of being passed across the whole sphere of American policy and all groups of government. And we've got the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank holding pat on their interest rate cuts. And you've got, obviously, the U.S.-China trade negotiations moving forward with especially these new tariffs that were supposed to go into effect on Sunday, not now going forward, and those being canceled. And suspicion or expectations are very high. And I would put myself in that category that increased farm goods are going to be purchased by China as part of this deal to cut back on the tariffs. So you stack on top of that Mexico purchasing the fifth largest amount of corn in a sale, export sale ever of 63 million bushels. And, you know, you've got a pretty good week to end the week in terms of the demand bears, the funds that have been negative demand so significantly this last 2 years. They seem like they're kind of running out of room and getting put in a corner at the end of this week.
So a quick question, because you were on Commodity Week yesterday, and of course we've had this announcement since then. Did it change very much what you thought the feel of Commodity Week yesterday might have been?
No, I was fairly optimistic that a deal would get done, because I really do feel like this was our last best chance, and you and I talked about that both on air and off air. This was really the place where Xi and Trump had to come together. Otherwise, they were probably going to part company. The talk yesterday or during the Commodity Week programming time frame was a skinny trade deal, quote unquote skinny, that they would not have a lot in it. I felt like that by the end of the day and by the time the U.S. trade representative got done talking, it was fat for agriculture, not skinny. Because essentially we're going to go from about $16 billion in exports to China and ag goods up to $40 billion and possibly hit $50 billion. based upon the research I've done, I think this came from the Wall Street Journal. I can't remember where it came from, but I think 2012 was the top number of $29.5 billion we shipped in ag commodities by value to China, and that was 2012. So if we get $40 or even $50 billion, you're talking about, you know, essentially doubling what we have sent them over the course of the last 10 or 11 years. And you start thinking about that, and you try to think about it in kind of a calm mindset. This really opens up the idea that any South American weather that would curb South American corn and bean production could really be felt by the market now. And, you know, several other things that maybe have been kind of off the radar screen when it comes to supply issues. I think the trade's going to have to reevaluate this, you know, pretty much holistically.
Yeah, so we'll have to set this aside at least for some time being through the end of the year. I don't think signing of this particular phase one will take place until the new year. So the trade will set it aside. What do we see for the next couple of weeks then?
Yeah, you're right. The timing right now is a Jan 30 signature and then take effect 30 days after that. That's the latest I've seen. So what we saw today was December futures expire. I think that had a big play in, along with the confusing information coming back and forth on this trade agreement, why the market had a two-sided look to it. We see that the wheat, the soft red wheat, was able to hold on to its premium in the December contract and expire at a premium versus the now lead month, March. It's been a long time since I've seen that. That's a very good sign, probably the best sign of all heading into next week. And this is the critical sign to me, is that the U.S. dollar index fell down to what at its lowest point on Friday morning to its lowest level since June, July. The lows from June, July, that was the time when pretty much everything fell apart when it came to the commodity rally and the grain rally specifically. So I want to say we've gone back to where we started with this trade deal, especially if USMCA comes up. And so number three has to do with MCA. So we've got the wheat, we've got the dollar, and then we've got the Senate and how they handle impeachment and how quick they can get to USMCA. So that's what I see going into next week as the top three features.
Yeah. Will they sign USMCA next week? McConnell said not until after the impeachment's over, which means the end of January could be a big deal.
Yeah. I talked to a client in Kentucky who I don't want to say he's in the know, but he's never given me bad advice when it comes to Mitch McConnell. And he told me that McConnell, in his opinion, is not negative President Trump. He wants it over quickly. Maybe the thought is that McConnell doesn't bring in any witnesses, puts it up for an up-down vote like Senator Graham wants it, and all of a sudden we're done within a day, and we're off to USMCA. So I'm not giving up hope that USMCA will get done before Christmas.
All right. Anything else before I let you go?
Oh, I think we've had enough. Watch the livestock. We're getting really up there on the cattle, and they took very seriously this trade agreement. So we're getting very heavy in the dressed weights, almost at two-year highs, if I'm right about where we come in today, Todd. So watch the cattle and the spring hedges. Quarter one, quarter two could be real good here.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
And of course, is Mike Zuzlo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Do visit our website there at WILLAG.org. You'll find the details of next week's Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I'll be traveling with the agricultural economist across the state of Illinois. We'll start in Mount Vernon in southern Illinois at the Holiday Inn on Monday morning. You can join us. Details again at ag.org. Walk-ins are welcome. We'll be in Springfield at the Crown Plaza on Tuesday, in East Peoria at the Paradise Hotel and Casino, and then on Thursday we'll be in Ferrandas in DeKalb, Illinois. We'll wrap up things here in Champaign on Friday of next week. That's a pretty full auditorium, but I know it's bigger than what we've got there. I think almost 260 are already pre-registered at that one, but please join them if you want. Walk-ins will be welcome there as well. You can do that each and every morning next week. Check out details of the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I'll be traveling with the Ag Economist from the U of I. The Farm Doc team, folks like Gary Schnitke, Todd Hubb, Scott Irwin, Nick Paulson, Jonathan Coppas, and Dale Latz. I hope to see you next week. In today's agricultural news, China and the United States have come to a phase one agreement as it relates to the negotiations over trade between the two nations. China has agreed in that phase one to buy $32 billion of additional U.S. farm products over 2 years as part of the pact. That according to the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. He told that to reporters on Friday, adding the deal would be signed the first week of January. As part of the agreement, Beijing agreed to buy roughly $16 billion more in American agricultural products in each of those years, adding to the 2017 baseline of $24 billion, Lighthizer added. But Beijing agreed to strive for some $5 billion in additional purchases each year. That would add up to about $40 to $50 billion in added Chinese agricultural purchases that the president has promised when he first announced the agreement back in October. Overall, China had committed to important structural changes and to buying some $200 billion more dollars in U.S. goods and services over 2 years, focused on four areas: manufacturing, engineering, agriculture, and service. That, again, according to Robert Lighthizer, who is the U.S. Trade Representative. The agreement hammered out in detailed negotiations between the two sides over the past 2 months. Lighthizer said there would be specific targets for Chinese purchases of specific products, but those would not be made public to avoid distorting markets. We're now joined by Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and Professor Emeritus. Good afternoon to you, Emerson. Thanks for being with us. It was an interesting year. Do you want to recap some of what you think might be the highlights for the 2019 season, or maybe better said, the lowlights?
Well, we're always going to remember that this was a season where some serious new records were set in lateness of planting. Something that we had sort of said, we got big planters, you know, and we can get it done quickly, and that we'll never have this problem like we've had a few years in the past. But, boy, we certainly did show ourselves this year that if it keeps raining in May, you're going to stay out of the field. And with over half of our corn planted after the 1st of June and something like 80% of soybeans planted after the 1st of June, you know, these are just numbers like we've never even contemplated before. And most of the data we had on planting date, you know, stopped way short of where people actually planted this year. So we were into the great unknown in terms of, you know, can you really plant a crop in corn crop in northern Illinois in the middle of June and expect to get any yield from it? Or is it going to frost before it's done? And these sorts of things. Very few of us have seen the crop frost out before it's finished in Illinois, but I think a lot of us expected we'd surely see that this year if frost had come on time. But after the late planting, and I think this is somewhat a testament to the ability of today's corn hybrids and soybean varieties to just really start out and do well no matter what the circumstances, the season was pretty good. And, you know, we go back and think, well, they missed all these longest days of the year. You know, June really didn't do much. I mean, the crop wasn't out there in June to actually take advantage of the sunshine and temperatures we had. The rest of the season was pretty benign in most of the state. We had some dry areas, and we did see an effect of that. But most of the crops are harvested now, and yield projections for corn, the November estimate was 179, and for soybean was 51. And those are kind of remarkable when you think of what kind of start we got. And I'm thinking, you know, in some areas, certainly the yields were much better than that, and there were a few places in Illinois that had the best yields they'd ever had. Now, these weren't necessarily the areas with the latest planting, but we know that we have enough season, generally, temperatures, to get a crop done that's planted late. And September really handed us a nice bonus this year. We were saying back in July and August that we needed another August to happen in September, and it almost did. And so even a little bit above normal in September helped this soybean crop in particular came to an end, you know, and lost its leaves earlier than I thought it would. And this is just another thing we don't really know what to expect, but the temperatures were such, and the soybeans crop showed its ability to put those pods on and fill seeds, even though it didn't have as many days or it started to do it much later than it normally does.
That was Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, talking about the 2019 growing season. On this Friday, as usual, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's start with what the weather forecast looks like. Are we going to get more snow?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't like the system that's coming out of the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas at the end of the week. Right now, it's really wet along the southeast and on the east coast, and that system moves out, and then behind it, there's a wave right now that's out in the Pacific, but it's screaming through pretty quickly, and it's going to start a system off at the end of our weekend that's going to basically bring us snow chances for the early part of next week. Now, it's pretty tricky on trying to pin down amounts right now and where the heaviest snow band is going to be, but it does look to cut across parts of Kansas, Missouri, in through central Illinois and over to Indiana and Ohio. So this could be a few inches out of this one, quick hitter coming through here, but definitely some colder air coming in behind it. So we got an active pattern here in the near term, and that's the system I'll be watching most carefully early next week.
Have you been traveling this week? I think that's the case, and I suspect you've had eyes on some interesting things.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing that I saw this week was I was up in North Dakota to start the week, and I just was amazed by how much corn is still in the ground. They saw a foot of snow on the ground, and there was, in some places, the drifts were coming up 4 or 5 feet up on the corn crop that's still out there. In addition to that, looking at some of the data, there's as much as 6 inches of excess moisture in their soil right now. And therefore, a bunch of farmers I talked to said all of their sump pumps are running. Their tile drain, even though the topsoil is frozen, but their tile drain's still running. They've got so much water. And I hate to say it, but I asked them, I said, when are you folks going to be able to get this crop out? And because of the cold weather that's locked in up there, they're going to get a lot of these little clipper systems coming through. But that clipper pattern, they're not going to be warming up anytime soon. And unfortunately, a lot of them said it'll be something that they'll be mowing down next to April. So this is it's a rough go in the North Central Plains right now for sure. And I have a lot of sympathy for what those folks had gone through this year.
And you went from there to where? The southeast?
Yeah, I'm right now in North Carolina, and it's very, very wet down here. And that's one thing that's quite interesting right now is I was talking to a bunch of farmers down here and trying to explain to them what I think the rest of winter is going to look like. And because of some of the things happening in the central and North Pacific, specifically the very warm water that's in North Pacific, it looks as though this is going to be a year where we have a very active storm track that starts somewhere in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and then has one preferred path that goes through the Ohio River Valley and another one that kind of skirts along the southeast. So my forecast for a lot of these folks here was to be on the lookout for a wetter than average winter. And maybe for us, if that storm track does hold true, we could also see a pretty active storm track for Illinois as well. And that may include some more snow. So that warm Pacific keeps all the heat there and not so much here in the mid part of the country.
And then you didn't mention a polar vortex, but because it's that time of year, I think I want to know about it.
I know. So right now, over the next about 7-8 days, we're going to watch the polar vortex split apart. And one piece of it's going to be sitting over parts of North America, specifically over the Hudson Bay, and another piece will be over Siberia. And normally when we see that configuration, we get really worried about brutally cold weather. But remember, the polar vortex is in the stratosphere, not in the troposphere. That's the layer that we live in. And sometimes both the troposphere and stratosphere kind of talk to one another and they're connected and communicating well. This particular case is not so, which means I'm going to have to watch it wobble around maybe another month before we probably get a real polar vortex disruption, which could come by maybe mid-January.
And does it have an impact on South America, or should we discuss something else there?
No. So when we think about that particular factor, it is connected to some of the behavior of the winds and the ocean temperatures in the Pacific. But really for South America, what will be most critical for them is to watch the Indian Ocean dipole event finally fade off to be basically a non-factor by the time we get into January, let's say mid-January. Now, why that's critical is that's going to put another circulation into control over the Brazilian monsoon. We call that the MJO. And when we talk every Friday, we need to be paying attention to whether or not the MJO is in phases 3, 4, 5, and 6 or 7, 8, 1, and 2. Because 3, 4, 5, and 6 would be very dry phases for parts of Brazil. And right now, some of the longer range projections that just came out are projecting Brazil's main growing areas to see a drier than average rest of their summer. So we'll have to watch and see if that verifies. Certainly in the near term, it's very dry in eastern Brazil and only wet in parts of northern Argentina and southern Brazil. So there is a lack of solidly good weather down in South America as well right now.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agribull joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Next week, I'll be on the road coming to you from places like Mount Vernon. We'll be at the Holiday Inn in the morning with the Illinois Farm Economics Summit, emceeing that event, along with the Ag Economist from the U of I. You can join us if you'd like. You can find all the details on our website at willag.org. Walk-ins are welcome. Then we'll travel to Springfield and East Peoria, DeKalb, and Champaign. That's all next week. I hope you can join us for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Don't worry if you haven't pre-registered. You're certainly welcome to walk in each and every morning next week. Now, up next, yesterday afternoon, I recorded Commodity Week. Of course, this would have come out prior to the time that today's announcements were made from the United States and China as it relates to a trade agreement. However, I think this program is really interesting, especially as it relates to all of the standing corn in parts of the Northern Plains and the northwestern and northern parts of the Corn Belt. Our panelists for the week included Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, along with Mike Zuzla, GlobalAnalytics.biz from Atchison, Kansas, Elaine Cubb from Ipswich, South Dakota, and ElaineCubb.com, Mastering the Grain Markets, and a brand new analyst to join the crew today from right here in Champaign, J.P. Jones from INTL F.C. Stone. At the beginning of the program, I asked J.P. to introduce himself.
Sure. My name is J.P. Jones, as you mentioned, and I am with INTL F.C. Stone as a risk management consultant, work focused on commercial elevators, primarily in the area of OTC, and then also focus on producer marketing and working with producers as they put together marketing strategies for each crop year.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been with FC Stone for about 3 years now. And before that, I was with Cargill.
For how long?
Put me on the spot. I believe 3 or 4 years with Cargill.
Fantastic. Anything you want to talk about for sure today?
The conversation today is around tariff and whether or not we have a phase one agreement. So I think that's what everybody has been focused on. And then maybe the USMCA, the impact of that, I think are two things I would throw out this afternoon.
That's J.P. Jones. He is with FC Stone right here in Champaign County. Joined our crew yesterday recording Commodity Week. Stay with us on our home station. You'll hear the rest of that program this afternoon. Many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. And, of course, you can hear it online right now if you'd like at willag.org.